I was going to take notes, but I do have a question.
Take notes of the question.
The continuum of tender options that you showed before from your own habitat, is there any model or framework in place that you know of that helps practitioners decide on which is an appropriate option to pursue in given situations, or is it just contextual knowledge and understanding?
Yeah, I think the answer is no, and it should be, but it's, it's highly context specific. There is a little bit of learning on it. I'll just give you one. This is a more technical area, and I wanted to not necessarily go into it because it does get a little land geek phenomenon. But essentially, there is some really quite nice paper from you in Habitat, a recent one, on this question of what do you choose? How do you go about it? And what they say, and it's just a way of thinking about it, okay, is that there are such circumstances, particularly in a natural disaster in an armed conflict environment, where you're dealing with a very poor level of land governance. So the land agency is corrupt, it's dysfunctional, it's damaged, and the records are extremely incomplete, right? Which is actually describes most of the countries I've worked in. Very poor levels of land governance. And what they say there is that a project approach where if you develop land data and land records for your project, and don't worry too much about trying to make that data and those records integratable, able to be scaled up and integrated into the land system generally. This is a really important point. What happens after disasters and conflicts is that projects produce a lot of land information. Shelter projects produce a lot of land information. There's really quite good maps, and you've got records of who got the house. And the question is, do you try to integrate that into the formal system of land administration, or is it standalone? And to what extent do you try to engage with government to give a legal characteristic to the land rights that your shelter beneficiaries are getting through your program? And the answer, short answer really, is that in these poor land governance cases, it can be a mistake to try and integrate into the formal legal system too much. It's not ideal. You'd love to be able to do it, but it's too difficult. So I'll give you an example. In Haiti, after the earthquake, most of Port-au-Prince, something like 90% is actually informal settlements. The figures are extraordinary for Haiti. And so there was no way that a shelter program could be based on lawful rights to land, right? Proof of some type of legal entitlement. So in the end, I think it was mainly UNDP program, they adopted what's called an enumeration approach, which is they just simply mapped who was living where, who got what houses, and they didn't try to refer that to law at all or legal rights. It's not ideal, but it was the only way to go in that context. Whereas in Aceh, and I'll talk about this later, there was a community-based adjudication approach to land, which was very effective in terms of generating documents for the shelter program. Aceh is a really good example. But and then they tried to integrate those documents, those community-generated documents, into the formal system, and that failed by and large. And people don't tell you that. The World Bank won't tell you, but it did fail, and I can explain why. So it's not a bad idea that what they're saying is that with good quality land governance, go for the process, go to try and improve the land system to get this formalised right so you're higher up the ladder. But the worse the level of land governance, the more, unfortunately, you're likely to be lower down the ladder. Okay? And this is the other point they make is, I'll leave the slides, there's an example from Afghanistan. There's a lot of very useful software instruments now that allow you, through satellite photos and through Google Maps, you can actually see land boundaries. And as part of a shelter program, often the maps of parcels are actually quite good. Now, there are instruments, for example, there's a pen. It's obviously an expensive pen. But you can get if you've got a good enough satellite photo, if you trace on the photo the visible boundaries, that will automatically upload that data into a software that will show a land information system map, a digitalized map. These are relatively low cost sort of tools, but the experience is that the people who are doing it are in love with the technology, that they never work unless you've actually got people on the ground collecting paper records, and those paper records need to be digitalised to integrate with the land bank. So that's another lesson there on how to choose different approaches, sort of combining technology with participatory processes.